So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Hello and welcome to the Folklore Podcast. I'm Mark Norman, folklore researcher and author. Petrified is a horror fiction podcast based heavily in Irish folklore and superstitious belief. The anthology series features tales of ordinary people encountering the supernatural, with results that don't always end well. The show has won numerous accolades at the New York Festival's Radio Awards and the Irish Podcast Awards. Season 3, which started recently, features guest performances from Welcome to Night Vale's Cecil Baldwin and New York filmmaker Larry Fessenden. Here's a trailer.
Oh God!
Back in, quick!
Her.ie says Petrified captures listeners' attention from the get-go.
It won't open.
Reeling them in for a deeply unsettling ride before delivering on some serious scares.
When you call the dead back, they are angry, and they are lost, and they are hungry.
Petrified, the award-winning horror drama returns with a cast including Cecil Baldwin and Larry Fessenden.
Is that Robert?
I smelled death. The stench of rot.
Petrified, an all-new season of Tales from a Darker Ireland out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
What am I doing? Just let's end this.
I recently had the pleasure of discussing the show, its development, inspirations and characters, with writer and director Peter Dunn and recurring actress Margaret McAuliffe. Mags and Peter, welcome to the Folklore Podcast. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. And here we are sitting on the brink of the release, in fact, the just released of the beginning of season 3 of your podcast, Petrified, which we are going to talk about today, along with the kind of inspirations and the folklore behind it. So, Peter, I'm going to ask you to start. Before we learn a little bit about yourselves, we ought to just learn a little bit about Petrified for those who don't know it. So can you give us a brief summary of your project?
Yeah, so Petrified is a horror anthology podcast which takes a look at a darker Ireland. So we look at folklore. We look at famous moments in Irish history and we give it a kind of horrific spin. So it's little 30 to 40 minute radio plays that we release weekly.
And how did this come about? Because I know you have the kind of broadcaster support in Ireland as well for this, don't you? How did that all come about?
Yeah, so what originally happened was Liam Garrity, who's the producer. So I would be the writer and director of Petrified. So Liam Garrity's the producer. And we would have worked together before on kind of almost audio ghost experiences, I suppose you'd call them. And Mags was actually in both of them. So there was one called Eerie and one called Bram. And basically what people did was they put on headphones and they were brought on this audio tour around Dublin. But what we kind of didn't tell many people at the start was all the stories they were hearing were fake. So the dream was for tourists to come and listen to this and then go back to their homes and just say, you'll never guess what happened in all these locations in Dublin, but none of them would be real. So we'd be making our kind of own urban legends. And from making those audio tours, just chatting with Liam, the kind of what felt like the next, not logical step, but the next step, I suppose, would have been a podcast. Yep.
And Max, how did you end up involved in all of this?
Well, myself and Peter are friends many years. I met his partner on a show 12 years ago and met Peter very casually afterwards in the pub, and we really got on. And ever since then, Peter has written me into most of his projects, fortunately enough for me. So I'm well used to his style of writing and the themes that he loves to write about. And I find it really exhilarating. It's unlike any other work I've ever done, and I look forward to each and every project.
Now, I was going to say...
Until now.
I was going to say that Ireland is very rich in folklore, but of course, really, that's a stupid thing to say, because any country is very rich in folklore. It has its own cultural heritage and its own beliefs. What I should say is that Ireland sees folklore as more important than a lot of other countries, and it has a background in that. So we have really important collections of folklore in Ireland, both the collection of stories from school children years ago and the general kind of Irish folklore collections. Was folklore a big part of your growing up in Ireland, either of you?
Definitely something that, you know, I particularly like about kind of Irish folklore. And Ireland would have a great connection to kind of storytelling and in particular ghost stories. You know, there's thing of, like, you know, people gathered around the fire kind of sharing stories, or everyone's, you know, everyone nearly has kind of some weird tale to tell, or, you know, someone's aunt had a haunted house, or some picture fell off the wall and, like, your cousins and that person passed away or something. So it was a real, even growing up, my family would have been very much storytellers. And it was unusual because I would have grown up in an urban area, Ballyfermot in Dublin. But even within that, my aunts and my mother and my grandmother and great aunts and stuff like that, they would always have, I suppose, like, weird tales. You know, the growing up, the banshee was a real thing. You know, we'd be warned about the banshee, like, sitting on a wall, combing her hair, and people saying that they saw her and stuff like that. And this wouldn't be in the country lane. This would be, you know, on a wall of a house in kind of suburbia. And but there was a lot of, and especially superstitions, you know, don't put a hat on a bed, don't put shoes on a table, stuff like this. So it was kind of something that became very much, it would have been one of those things that you didn't realize how strange it was until afterwards, because it was part of everyday life, like people talking about this stuff. And, you know, the and fairies as well, you know, don't leave certain stuff out, or, you know, if the milk will go sour and things like this. So it was only in retrospect, as you get older, you go, yeah, this was a little bit strange, the stuff that we were talking about or led to believe when we were younger.
Yeah, I think and to talk to that point about keeping things alive in the present day, I think we have such a rich storytelling culture, and I think most people know that about the Irish. We would have collected music. There were music collectors that went around collecting jigs and reels that were played by people that hadn't written them down yet. And the tradition of passing the story up along through the generations was definitely embedded in our childbringing, in our upbringing. And so we never really, as Peter says, we never really saw it as, oh, we have a rich tradition of storytelling. It was just the way things are. And then it's only when you kind of look back in hindsight, you go, oh, actually, yeah, Ireland has a marked difference to other countries in terms of how much they carried on the traditions of storytelling.
So what areas have you found particularly good to draw on here? Because you are, at the end of the day, presenting a horror podcast, and there's certainly plenty of plenty of stuff to draw on from within any culture's folklore that resembles the horrific. What's been a good pick for you in terms of Irish lore there?
There was lots of stuff about the devil. You know, it didn't seem like, you know, the biblical, you know, overlord of hell kind of thing. It just almost seemed like this. It was almost like the devil was the second name for the boogeyman, or as we used to call it in Dublin growing up, the biddy. The biddy would be another name for the boogeyman. But you know, seeing him as an actual person, stories like you know, the Hellfire Club story, where the people were playing cards one night and somebody and a stranger came to the door during the storm and it had a game of cards, and then somebody dropped a card on the floor, and when they leaned down to pick it up, they realized the stranger had cloven hooves, and there would be stuff like that. So the devil was almost like just this man that walked around encountering people all the time, and, you know, meeting people at the crossroads, having games
to chat. And was something of a trickster, in as much as he was embedded in evil works, wasn't it? We have that sort of wry glint in the eye, you know, I'm gonna pull the wool over your eyes in some way, shape or form. And it's funny, I heard that story, but that it was set in Loftus Hall, which is dubbed Ireland's scariest house or mansion. And again, the story, and they brought us into this drawing room. I did a tour there and they brought us into this drawing room, and then this is the table that the card game took place in. And then there'd been so many sightings in different rooms in the house of white ladies, and I live in a suburban town called Malahide, but we have a castle that it came down from the Talbot family, and there was a white lady in the tower. I don't think that there could be a castle in Ireland that there's not some sort of a white lady or a red lady that haunts the halls.
And they did, like, funny enough, always seem to be some kind of connection with the with how we saw the devil and gambling, you know, so that it would be a bet, you know, betting your life, betting your head kind of thing. So it was always a game of chance. So yeah, so it stopped kind of being this, as you know, as Mike was saying, it stopped kind of being this religious thing and kind of like a trickster. And I think maybe it's tied in with, you know, the Irish mythological character, the Pooka, who would have been the same. He'd be a shapeshifter and a trickster. So I think kind of they almost bled into each other.
Mm. We have a pet name for people that are being a little bit cheeky, and it's the divil. You're being a divil. And that's definitely related to the word devil. And there's definitely a crossover there. Cheekiness, being a little bit thinking outside the box, trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. Yeah, definitely devil behaviour.
Well, the devil, of course, is a later construct. It's a Christian construct and used in the way of representing things that are bad and things that you shouldn't do and evil. But of course, most within folklore, most stories relating to the devil relate to much older things. So in English folklore, a lot of the stories that are ascribed to the devil used to be ascribed to giants or used to be ascribed to fairies, and that whole trickster element obviously comes from much earlier things. We've looked at the Pooka before. There was we did an episode looking at the great controversy over the Pooka statue in Ireland, the Pooka sculpture, so the way that the devil represents things, I think, has changed very much. And I think that trickster element is certainly something which comes from far earlier beliefs, isn't it? Now, in terms of drawing on that folklore for what works in terms of horror, I know, Peter, this is something that you've looked at, isn't it? Because you've done some research into kind of people's fears and that kind of aspect of using horror. Can you talk a little bit to what you looked at there and how that's been useful?
Yeah, so it was a few years ago now, and it was a research project funded by the Arts Council of Ireland, and it was kind of looking at horror as entertainment and things like that. So as part of that, I wanted to see where our fears and phobias came from. So I would have, you know, I had this questionnaire that like a couple of people kind of filled out, and they all talked about fears and superstitions. And then also I interviewed children ranging from the ages of 5 to 15 to see where their fears came from. And then I also talked to child psychologists to see how we develop a fear or phobia. And something that was really interesting was when I was speaking to one child psychologist, she was saying, Vanessa LeBue, her name is, she was Canadian. She was saying that in regards to fears and phobias, where fears would have been very localized before. So, you know, in certain countries, certain places, they have a real fear of God. She's in, especially in kind of South American countries. In other places where they'd have, like, you know, an understandable fear of animals because of, you know, you'd have wild animals there. But she said that what was happening was, which I found really interesting, was we were all starting to get, and from children, we were all starting to get the same fears because of the internet. So she said, because everyone's more connected now, our fears were becoming more universal. So religion didn't have as much of a sway, but like things that would have been in popular culture are, you know, becoming objects of fear. And because, you know, American culture, I suppose, has such a sway over the world with films and stuff like that, it would be American film that was actually causing a lot of universal fears, while kind of more homegrown stuff was disappearing. Things that when I was reading the answers given by people, an awful lot of people still were conflating fears with superstitions. So things that they would be kind of afraid to do rather than things that they were afraid of. And there was a lot of things about bringing bad luck, you know, don't put your umbrella up indoors. There was a lot of surprising talk of fairies, you know, things that you didn't want to do to bring the wrath of the fairies down you. And I thought it was going to be a bit like kind of, you know, that high diddle eye thing, you know, the Irish with their fiddles and the pigs in the kitchen and stuff like that. But that fairies were still a big topic of concern for a lot of people. And it was interesting that there was a lot of stuff that wasn't just, you know, there were things that were modern fears, you know, people would be afraid of plane crashes and things like that, but that there was a lot of stuff that seemed to have been passed on from older generations that we just held on to.
Max, as an actor, how do you take that information and use it to your advantage when you're trying to portray these stories?
Well, I think for Petrified episodes, anyway, you're given the script last minute, which is a glorious way to work. Because you've no time to overthink character choices. Peter tends to give you a very succinct character description, an accent, and then tells you, off you go. So a lot of the unfolding of the, or like all of the unfolding of the action is as fresh to you, the actor, as it is to the listener. So it means you're not playing the ending as you're going along. You're coming to it at the same time as everyone else. So it gives it a freshness. So there is no time to research or overthink or say, oh, I'm drawing on this story that I heard from my aunt about the banshee coming to her great aunt. You know, there's no time for that. He trusts that that's all kind of understood by all of his actors and trusts them to deliver in the moment with the script in hand.
Yeah, and that does give, I guess, a much more natural performance as well. I was reading the transcript of an interview that you did at the podcast festival where you had a particular role within an episode that was unveiled at the end of the episode that you weren't even aware of when you,
yes,
when you started acting in the beginning of that episode.
I don't think it's too much to give away that I was the killer in the end. And I had no idea as I played along. So that was actually, It was quite funny as well to come to the last page and go, oh, great. But then that's how everyone else was foiled. I didn't believe in myself.
But,
Yeah, and that was kind of the thing. So exactly what Max was saying, but just to echo it, that if the actor knew that they were the killer, you know, there would be a fear of like they would overplay it, yeah. Or kind of go, oh, well, I hint something here. I'm like, no, I want this to be a shock. I don't want any hints. I don't want, you know, I don't want anything kind of suggested or a wink, wink to the audience. Just go with it. Yeah.
And thankfully, I love sight reading, which is taking a script fresh and reading from it, because there's a lot, you know, it's a different skill set, really, to be able to perform in the minute or in the moment, having never seen the material before. And it's something I've always enjoyed, and I didn't realize that I was any good at it. I just knew from when I was in school that I loved reading out loud, or if I was even talking with my friends now in my 20s or 30s, I'm like, and then they said, and I would read out the text message, you know. I love reading aloud, and so this is a perfect marriage, myself working on Petrified episodes.
And of course, it is the mark of good writing as well that there are suitable twists and whatever in a script that you don't realise until the end that it's
nothing
you.
About Peter Dunne is predictable.
Thank you. I think
we'll take that as a compliment. For sure. You were talking there just now, Peter, about modern fears and the internet. Is that something that you've drawn on particularly, because there are obviously whole rafts of folklore being created via these kind of modern things? You know, you've only got to look back a few years and look at ridiculous things like the Momo Challenge and the alleged blue whale cult and things like that generating online. I think if I remember rightly, your very first episode of the first season was set in a radio station, and that is, I suppose, the, you know, it's not quite as high tech as perhaps some of the other things, but it's still a modern story, and something that has, you know, a lot of marks of urban legend about it in that script as well. I think is that something that you've been able to draw on a lot, sort of modern myth?
Try to. One of the tendencies I would have had when I was writing kind of Petrified episodes before was, and this wouldn't even be a conscious thing, I was kind of going into the past and looking at things that happened in Ireland before. So, for instance, in the last series, there was an episode about ghost estates, which would, you know, with all these kind of half-built estates in the Celtic, like, you know, I was saying that the name alone lends itself to a horror podcast. But and even in this new series, without giving too much away, there's an episode about the phenomenon of moving statues in Ireland in the 1980s, when an awful lot of people said that they saw these religious statues moving. But then, to kind of to answer your question, for instance, the episode that we did at the London Podcast Festival with Mags and another actor, Michelle McMahon, that episode was about the live recording of a podcast. But then it was also looking back at like an old audio file and kind of myths and stuff like that. So I kind of like to mix the two. I don't know if I'd ever go, even when I did try and do the full kind of technology thing with the live podcast, a live recording of a live podcast, there was something ancient about it as well. That's where I, as a horror fan, or even as a horror writer, it's sometimes difficult to, you know, in order to kind of create for you, you want somebody to feel isolated a little bit. So even with the first episode of the radio station, like it was, which Max was in as well, it was about a late night radio host and his producer, and they were the only ones in this building in the middle of nowhere. So even
it was
though
it was quite remote, yeah.
Yeah. So with the, I don't want to do something that's too technologically advanced, because, you know, the internet, you're just like, you can Google the answer. You can Google how to kill this thing. I want people to be isolated. So I don't know if I've cracked it, but then also I'm not sure if I want to crack it. I like getting back to older stuff.
Isolation is a really important point, isn't it? We spoke at one of our weekend online events to the creators of the film Host, which is obviously a horror set on Zoom, and that's the perfect kind of isolation modern technology mix, isn't it, as well? So I guess, yeah, it can work to your advantage if you're drawing on the right themes. Yeah. Mags, is there a particular episode that's appealed to you in terms of the kind of ideas that we've been talking about? You've been in quite a few of them.
Yeah. Of the new season, I think thinking about what we've been speaking about today, in the new season, I play a part called Catherine, and I think it's the first episode that I'm in, and Catherine has taken a very unusual job. This episode is based around the urban myth of the chain letter. Now, I think that's a kind of a topic that is so interesting, because it would have, the chain letters would have started back in the 60s. People would send themselves these letters, and if you don't pass this on to 10 more people, you know, someone you know will die. And then I grew up in the 80s, and we definitely used to pass around chain letters. And then in the 90s, it was an email. If you don't send this email on to this many people, not something someone you know will die. It was something a little bit more insidious than that. Something like, you know, technology will fail you, or you'll have loads of bad luck, and that kind of thing kind of crept in. And now I've seen loads of Facebook posts of people saying, you mean this to me in my life, and if you don't put a comment underneath this to denote our relationship in one word and post this whole ream of information as your status, you know, I'll know you're not a good friend. You know? So this idea of the pass it on, has been around ever since I was a little girl. So I thought that was a really, really cool episode to get to work on. I worked on it with another actress called Rosanna Purcell. And again, I didn't know how it was going to unfold by the end. And I don't want to give anything away there. But yeah, I think that's a perfect marriage again of taking an older sort of tradition and putting a new hard spin on it for 2023.
Let's talk a little bit more about the new season. You've got various voices who are regulars to this. Now, you've got two guest voices for season three, and we should probably mention them, mm-hmm. I guess, just because I know people will find this interesting and exciting, depending on what else they listen to. Tell us who you've got guesting for season three and how that came about.
Well, when we were in the process of making season three, Liam Garrity, the producer, he just sent me a text message, a WhatsApp message one night, and he was going, who would be like your dream voice cast for Petrified? And I thought it was just a random question. So I just replied, a name, and then Liam kind of sent a name back, and I thought no more about it. And then it was a couple of weeks later, I think it was barely a week later, and I was actually, funnily enough, sitting up really late writing an episode of Petrified. It was, you know, 12:30 at night, and Liam just sent me a text message going, they both said yes. I was like, what? So I didn't realise that Liam was actually going to ask them. I thought he was just, you know, like having a conversation. So the two Cecil Baldwin, who is, for those who know, he would be famous for Welcome to Night Vale. And so he's in an episode called Creeps, and he was so nice to work with, a really lovely person. And then the other person there's a New York filmmaker called Larry Fessenden. So he would have done a lot of independent horror, both as a writer, director and actor, things like Wendigo, Jarface. He did a version of Frankenstein as well a couple of years ago. And that was, so, you know, being a horror fan and growing up actually seeing this person, there's still kind of moments of pinching myself when, you know, as well as doing the voiceover, like, you know, he's made videos to like kind of talk about it and stuff like that, and watching it, and like, you get there's it's hard to connect that, even though I've worked with him now, it's hard to connect that he's still in it. It still kind of blows my mind. But same thing, like listening to these, listening to two of them, it was lovely, because not only were they really, really nice to work with, but their voices sounded so amazing. So they would be the two. And then also for any For any Irish listeners out there, we also have Anne Doyle, the newsreader, who would be kind of a household name in most of Ireland. Now, she actually plays a newsreader in the episode about the moving statues phenomenon in the 1980s. So they'd be kind of, and as you said, we have our regular cast. But what's been lovely is from the first series of Petrified, we've just kind of use the same people over and over, so it's a little kind of Petrified family. Like, even when I'm writing them, I'll go, well, Mike's in nearly all of them, so that goes without saying. but you'll be writing one and you'll be going, oh, this will be the episode for Amy O'Dwyer, you know, or this will be the episode for Dave. And like, I always kind of have people in mind when I'm kind of writing them. So it's lovely to have new people to add to the Petrified family.
Who would you like to work with next then, Mags? You can probably get, you know, some requests in now and add them to the list.
Susan Sarandon. Although that might make me obsolete. Another redheaded actress. No. I'm going to say Susan Sarandon. Why not? I'm going to say Susan Sarandon.
Redheaded folklore, something I've written about. There's plenty of that, of course. There's some good stuff you can work into some episodes there.
For our live podcast in London, Peter asked myself and another actress called Michelle McMahon to be in it. And we were up on the stage and was a black tablecloth put over the table and it was a black backdrop and it was our Petrified logo on the back. And then it was myself. You can probably see there, I have like very flaming red hair. And so does my co-star Michelle. And it was only then that I kind of went, oh, I know now why you're so fascinated with redheaded actresses. It's very creepy looking when you get loads of them together. yeah.
What in terms of superstition or belief or tradition do you find in Ireland in modern times that's still culturally significant and is something that you can use in your work?
The white high-ass van. There, when we were growing up, it was always a white van. There was a white van that was doing the rounds around the corner and they were kidnapping children. So the white van, a white white high-ass van. That, for me, culturally, that's the thing that we were most afraid of.
But do you still get those stories going around now? I certainly still see them on Facebook groups from time to time for, you know, local towns and villages relating to those sorts of stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the notion of being snatched. I don't know any kids that age. I have a daughter, but she's only about 20 months, so she's a little bit unaware at the moment. But I would imagine that those kind of scares continue on. But I would also say that they have changed. So I think the internet's going to play a huge part in how people are snatched, or the idea of being snatched or taken. I think the internet will take over from the drivers of the white high-ass fans.
Just kind of thinking of it now, it's kind of unusual, but also a little bit disturbing. When we were younger, and even kind of when I was growing up, I'd see other people wearing it. So people would either say the biddy, or people would just say the man is going to get you.
The man
is going to get you. And they think, oh, the man is going to get you. And just that, you know, I think it's curious and like kind of interesting that just like the male figure is a threat. You know, they didn't need to be any more explanation than that. If you don't stop, the man is going to get you. And yeah, it's the biddy is still a thing now in Ballyfermot, you know, and all that it represents. But they would be, well, not the man thing, but the biddy would be something like, it's just that kind of, what do people, you know, threaten their kids with? That's what I find interesting. What word or, you know, what description is going to make your children behave?
What's the new wooden spoon?
Yeah. But how you can, people trying to frighten a child into behaving rather than, you know, using.
I think Elf on the Shelf has definitely taken over. That was not something that we grew up with, and that has been sort of fabricated, invented in the last 10 years, causing, you know, are creating a lot of work for parents. But that's something that we, yeah, it's something, it's someone who was cheeky, that was kind of intel for Santa. Like Santa was just all knowing, all seeing. But certainly this middleman has never cropped up before.
Probably potential for a kind of elf on the shelf child's play kind of horror crossover there. I'm sure it's been done somewhere as well.
Oh, Peter's taking notes.
Time, yeah.
It's interesting. We had a Q&A, as you said, you had a little look over it. And one of the audience questions was in relation to women. And she said that out of a survey that was done, that women are more horrified by real events, so they will listen or have a penchant for murder, real life murder podcasts or whodunits or real horror, and that men had a slight leaning towards fictional horror. And you know, and I'd never thought about it like that before, so I wasn't very good in the Q&A in terms of how I answered the question, but it has given me pause to think about what I used to be afraid of. And that's why I answered with the White Hiace fan there. I know I was being kind of facetious, but also they were real scares that used to petrify me. And I know that certainly the horror movie that has the biggest effect on me is Wolf Creek. Because that's something, it's based on a true story. It actually happened somewhere out there. These things are happening to people. And I think that kind of chills me to the bone, more so than watching a rerun or watching back Salem's Lot, which is a film I used to watch with my father when I was young and be petrified over. Now, I don't see the fear in those kind of fabricated or fictitious beings. It's more what can actually happen to you when you go outside the door.
So, Peter, you write in this genre all the time. Mags, you're voicing this genre frequently amongst your other work. So what frightens you now?
Me?
Gosh.
Yeah. Either of you. Mags, no, you go first.
No, because I just answered there. You go, right, you Peter, go first go there, Peter.
Buy us some thinking time.
In pop culture, still I'm still kind of happy to say quite a bit. You know, the being a lifelong fan of horror, I'm luckily not one of those people that's jaded. I still do get, like, you know, hairs in the back of my neck and stuff like that. Like, but yeah, kind of old fashioned ghost, like M.R. James, his ghost stories still make me jump. Actually, physically, two of his stories made me jump when I was sitting. So ghosts and the supernatural kind of creep me out, but that would be in popular culture. But in real life, it's a bit of a weird thing that I wish I was more afraid of ghosts in real life, because because I think it would mean that I believed more. You know, I for somebody who it's very open to people's stories about, you know, supernatural or weird things and stuff like that. I kind of don't have, and not that I would poo-poo anyone or disbelieve them, but I don't really have much of a belief myself, but I wish I did. So I'm kind of a non-answer to your question. Mm-hmm. I wish I was more afraid of the supernatural than I got.
Fair enough. So Mags, aside from the unearthly voice over the baby monitor in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, that when you have a kid, it's equal parts love and fear, because every time I go into the room at night, I think she's dead. I check that she's still breathing. And that's obviously, a lot of parents feel the same. But in terms of, I mean, I went to a ghost house or with Peter in Temple Bar in Dublin City, and I was petrified out of my mind. And it wasn't so much that I thought that a ghost was present in the room, but I'm very, very jumpy as a person. I don't know, I'm kind of hyper vigilant. I don't know why, but I don't know what that says about my upbringing, but I am really, really hyper vigilant. And if someone comes up to me in the street and asks the time and I'm on my own, I kind of take a bit of a jump. So when we went into this haunted house, well, where yeah, they made it up like a haunted house and turned out all the lights, and I had Peter's hand and I nearly broke it, you know. I was I was so freaked out. So it's not that I necessarily think that the ghosts were in the room. I know that they were there to freak us out on purpose. But yeah, I'm very, very jumpy as a person. I do believe in ghosts. I do. I mean, that many people can't be making up sightings. That many people can't have imagined something that wasn't there. And people have recorded sounds. And I am one of these people that I take people at face value. If someone says something happened, I believe them until proven otherwise, that is. So I do believe in them. I haven't experienced any ghosts myself.
But this is the whole beauty of folklore, in my opinion, as a genre, is that it's not our position to say whether something exists,
yes,
or not. Is it real? No. What is real? Real is a construct. What we're interested in is why people interpret things in particular ways, and why they always have, or why things change from one to another, and what significance that has on people in a cultural setting or on an individual basis. So whether ghosts exist is irrelevant. They do. Whether they are spirits of the dead or whether they are something else that's being interpreted as something else, that's the other question. It's not what they are. The construct exists, the phenomenon exists. It's how it's interpreted which is of real interest.
Yes.
And I'm with you on the whole child thing as well.
My daughter's
15 now.
Oh, that's a scary time.
That's scary in all sorts of other ways.
Yeah.
But yes, the two things that we remember from when she was little that were really scary were her falling asleep in the car seat in the back of the car with her eyes open. So when you look in the rearview mirror, scary child.
That's and really freaky.
that was bad. And her sleepwalking to the stair gate at the top of the stairs in the middle of the night and just standing there staring. Like that scene in the first Paranormal Activity in the bedroom. Yeah. Both of those are very strong memories of our daughter when she was smaller. You've got this to come, Max.
She's possessed. Your daughter's possessed.
I don't doubt that for a moment. Absolutely agree with you there.
Wow, that not every kid does that. That is, wow, you have a life one there.
Yeah. So both of those are certainly, you know, childhood memories that we could well have done without.
Yeah, well, you're going to rehash them at her 21st now. You get your own back.
Absolutely. That's what parents are here for.
Absolutely.
So I'm mindful of the time. And the fact that certainly, Max, you have other things you need to do after this as well. Season 3 of Petrified is in the can. Can we say it's in the can for an audio format? Why not? Yeah. It's done and dusted. So where do you go from here?
Well, when we did the live recording in the London Podcast Festival, so we were very kindly invited to it by the organisers, and I hope I'm speaking on behalf of Mags also, but it was really enjoyable. And it just made us realise how few limits there actually are for kind of podcasts and live recording. So live events is something I'd love to get into more for this, you know, because how I like to kind of describe Petrified is, you know, if you're listening to it on headphones or something like that, it's like we're whispering a story into your ear. So it's still that kind of storytelling aspect. So I would love to see if we can recreate that, you know, feeling of closeness, feeling of storytelling, but in a live setting. So, you know, I love the podcast and I long may it continue. And there's no but, it's a kind of an also, I'd really like to see, could we, yeah, get into doing more live stuff.
Yeah, I certainly, I think I listened to the radio station episode whilst I was sat in my car, and that was probably a bad idea.
Oh. I just began listening to the first episode of season 3 there before this podcast started. I haven't quite finished it. What I find is really interesting is Peter has called up previous episodes within this episode. So the radio station is mentioned and what happened after the recorder stopped. is kind of divulged. And then another episode that's referenced is the Lighthouse episode. So I found that really satisfying to listen to at the start of this. It's like, oh, what happened after the fact? Oh, wow. Well, they're all dead.
Mm. Yeah, that's great, because you're creating a kind of petrified universe then.
Yes.
Yeah. And I had the opportunity to interview Rebecca Sonnenschein, who developed Archive 81 for Netflix.
Okay.
But in its original format as a podcast, you know, Archive 81 kind of did that, but on a different level, because it created a universe and then it created another universe somewhere entirely different, but took characters from there to there. So being able to enclose these things and cross-reference is really good.
And just something that about this episode in particular, but Max was mentioning. So for the first episode of the new series, we really, because we've been very, very lucky with fans and supporters, there's been some really kind of vocal supporters. And, you know, as kind of creatives, especially when we were starting off and we hadn't kind of, we didn't know if we'd found our feet yet, all this feedback from very nice people made a big difference to us. So for the first episode, what we wanted to do is, yeah, harken back to all this stuff, make it seem like that it's this world that's connected. But then I can say now, because hopefully the fans will have heard it and I'm not giving that away, what we did was particularly nice for Sweet fans. I wrote them into the episode as characters. So I would love to be kind of a fly on the wall in their homes when they're listening to the episode and realize that they're actually
in the episode.
Yeah. 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 That's brilliant. I like that. Okay, let's wrap up by just obviously encouraging people to go and listen to Petrified if they haven't already, or to get on with listening to more of it if they haven't got up to date yet. That's definitely a thing that they should do. For those that want to learn more about it, if this is a new introduction to them, where are the best places for them to go and seek out, other than on podcast app of choice, seek out more information about this?
Well, on social media, so across social media, Liam does the social media, so I'm going to sound like an idiot. Do you say our tag? at @petrified_pod on social media. I don't know what our handle. So you can follow us on social media.
And also, if you have anyone between the age of 7 and 12, would we say, Peter? Peter has also created a horror podcast for children, and it's called Spooky FM. And there are 2 seasons of that available on wherever you get your podcasts as well. So if you have any young up and coming devotees to all things supernatural, they will love Spooky FM.
So if you need a break to listen to Petrified, you can get your kids to listen to Spooky FM. Yeah.
Perfect. That would work well. I'll put links to all of those places on the episode page for this episode on the Folklore Podcast website, so that people can jump straight there. Mags, where can people find you?
I am moi_mags. That's moi_mags. I'm on Twitter and on Instagram.
Excellent. Thank you. I will send people in your direction also. It's been a pleasure to chat to you both. I've really enjoyed listening to Petrified thus far. I've got a little bit of catching up to do before I reach season 3, but I shall get there.
Not in your car on your own.
No, I've learned that lesson. That's a valuable lesson. If I'm going to bookings or gigs or performances and things, you know, that's my prime podcast listening time. But I perhaps need to filter a little bit more what I listen to when.
Definitely not when your 15-year-old is out with her pals.
No. She'll love it. She's obviously, she uses our Netflix or Prime accounts as well. And I go into sort of watch something, and all the things that she's been watching are there on the continue watching screen. And there's like my documentaries and stuff. And then there's Annabelle Creation.
Oh, wow. Oh, you have a live one. Oh, wow. This is great. Very encouraging.
Yeah. No, she does enjoy the genre. But we did take great delight in taking her to see Woman in Black at the Fortune Theatre in London. In fact, we'd taken her to see the touring version first, and she came out being like, oh, horror films don't particularly scare me, you know. She came out of that and went, never again am I watching this show. And then we made her go and watch it in the Fortune in its proper home with the original setting.
Wow.
And she came out of that and went, no, I meant it the first time, never. So, you know, the live entertainment route, Peter, there you go, is, you know, it's a good one to explore for certain. Fantastic. Max, Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. It's been a pleasure.
Love talking to you, Mark. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Season 3 of Petrified is releasing now. Listen to this and past seasons wherever you get your podcasts, but not alone in the dark. In a moment, we'll close with another clip from the show. But first, I'm delighted to say that full details of the 2023 Folklore Podcast Lecture Series are now up on the Folklore Podcast website. We have 15 world-class speakers who work with folklore, presenting on a variety of topics from fairies to folk tales and from ghosts to the paranormal in legal cases. You can book for each talk individually or, for best value, grab a season pass and save a third on the whole year. Video replays will be available for any talk you want to watch, so even if you can't make it live to everything, you won't miss a minute. All talks are followed by a Q&A with the presenter. All profits from the Folklore Podcast lectures support the podcast and the funding of the Folklore Library and Archive equally. To see full details of all the talks and book a place, please visit www.thefolklorepodcast.com/lectures. If you are a Patreon supporter of the podcast at the appropriate tiers, you can use your discount code for a further reduction. This is a really high-quality programme, and I hope you can join us for it. To close, here's a clip from the Petrified Season 2 episode Up the Airy Mountain, featuring Mags alongside Deirdre Monaghan and Deborah Wiseman. A group of nuns, making a religious pilgrimage to a remote shrine, begin to realise there may be something to fear in the woods. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
The nuns used to give me the ruler in school. You're all a pack of perverts.
Out! Out! Before I call the guards.
I'm going to haunt you. How can you look at yourselves?
Are you all right, Sister Clota?
Yes, Reverend Mother. I understand why she did it. I can only imagine that...
Oh, you're too soft, Clota. Get up, fix yourself, and follow me in.
So, I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.